Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, we still have the Merry Christmas screener up here in the studio on the TV behind me. That's still there. The Star Wars Christmas tree is still here, complete with, you know, you order stuff online. I don't know if it's hashtag 'cause COVID or what the deal. Maybe because it was made in China by four-year-olds. I don't know. But actually had ordered a while back a Darth Vader tree skirt. Not exactly Christmassy, is it? But that finally came in like on Saturday or something. So I came into the studio and dropped some stuff off and boom, now I got the proper tree skirt down there. On this side of Christmas, oh well, what are you going to do about it? Hope you had a wonderful Christmas. We had a great Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, December 26th, December 27th, had a sweet 16 celebration with our youngest, our daughter. And so just been a fun weekend, a very enjoyable with family. I hope yours was as well. And the news just keeps coming at us ferociously. Only in 2020 do you get an explosive RV situation on Christmas morning. That, of course, in Nashville. And then it didn't take long because we just live in a crazy culture. And I don't know if that's specific to America. I think it's kind of normal around the world now. But we certainly are in that season here in America. So, of course, he's in front of one of the AT&T buildings, AT&T down the street. Then everybody looks at who owns the building, who's involved with AT&T. And then a printing facility burned to the ground in New York or New Jersey that somehow was connected to voting machines and Dominion software. And, of course, the Nashville situation somehow connected to Dominion and the voting thing. And it, because as I read and shared in an article last week and talked through it to a certain extent, in this election, everybody was a Trump voter. Absolutely everybody. You're either voting against him because you hate him, or you're voting for him because you love him, or you just can't stand the thought of a Joe Biden administration with Kamala Harris. And then, of course, next week we'll have the runoff senatorial election. Trump's going to be in Georgia on Monday night. He'll be there the day before. So he'll be there Monday, January 4th, next Monday. He'll be doing a big rally trying to help those two Republicans down there to win the two U.S. Senate runoff seats, races there all at the same time. I mean, what a way to start 2021 with all those everything at stake in the U.S. Senate and of course, in the United States government in general, assuming that Joe Biden, quote unquote, assumes the office on January 20th, which I'm not going to believe that till we actually get there. And so it's just kind of nutso, right? And that's just where we're at. So Trump will be there next Monday, then the Senate election, special election on Tuesday, the 5th. Of course, we will not know because they cannot count. They don't know how to run anything. Apparently in Georgia or in a lot of these other states. So if you think we're going to know on Tuesday night before we go to bed who actually won the senatorial runoff elections, that's a ridiculous notion. Let go of that now. We're just going to get Trump-Biden part two in the days and perhaps even weeks to come as the fate of the United States hangs in the balance. No big deal. And then, of course, the very next day, Wednesday, January 6th, you have the congressional reading under the leadership of Mike Pence. Of each state's electoral college vote, and they've got several people in the House, led by Representative Mo Brooks, who says there's dozens of House members ready to challenge those, which is fine. It's constitutional and election law that was passed in the late 1800s. That's fine, but you have to have some Republicans in the Senate willing to sign on to each one of those objections, and Mitch McConnell trying to push that down because he's just, in the end, just a rhino. He's trying to protect his own little fiefdom up there and I think would like to see Trump leave because Trump's been rocking the boat for 4 years and they're just done with that. And so the whole thing's a big mess. So next week will be quite historic, to say the least, but we're in that season right now. Anyway, speaking of history, I'm going to get into a bunch of things because, I was one of the people that was applauding the president for pushing back on this bloated omnibus spending monstrosity at the end of there that they tied to the COVID bill so that they could kind of push it all through and pat themselves on the back. And he stood firm on that, at least for a couple of days, and then he folded like a cheap suit over the weekend and ended up signing it. But there was something in there that he referenced an old executive power that in the House of Representatives anyway is going to go nowhere. So I'm going to take you through that and several other things. And a great article by Newt Gingrich. Thanks to Sarah on our board for making me aware of that. And then some good news about you Christian conservatives, me being one of them, in the election turnout. I mean, monumental. And it's something very important as we push into the 2021 to remember, something that is a big stick and a big deal if we choose to exercise it as conservative convictional Christians. Okay, so we'll get to that. And then an article written by a former atheist out of Great Britain by the name of Rob Slane. He said 2020, the year the church was as sharp as a two-edged marshmallow. So I'll get to that. But this is kind of funny, right? Let's start off with a smile today. And a good lesson for all of us. This was in the Daily Wire. Girl Scouts accuse Boy Scouts of poaching recruits. Boy Scouts accuse Girl Scouts of starting a ground war. Okay, this is the deal. Here's the life lesson, friend. If you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything. So as the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts, much like our country, have pushed away from their founding principles and their roots and just embraced the culture and homosexuality and transgenderism and the gender stuff and all the confusion and everything else, what happens is you end up imploding in on yourself. And then as both organizations are dying, they're trying to poach from one another to try to stay afloat. And of course, that's not going to work. But that's what's going on. The Girl Scouts of the United States of America claimed in court documents that the Boy Scouts of America are engaging in a highly damaging recruitment war that is poaching potential members. In response, the Boy Scouts, which is currently rebranding to become Scouts BSA, thus leaving room for pretty much anybody that wants to join, right? They're claiming the Girl Scouts have launched a ground war. The New York Post reported that the feud between the two organizations began years ago, when the Cub Scouts announced that girls would be accepted in the organization years ago. That was 2018. In 2019, the Boy Scouts announced it would rebrand to become a gender-neutral organization and also accept girls. Stand for nothing, fall for anything, and you implode in on yourself when you try to chase the elusive, not-so-elusive, hand clap of the world. See the end of Romans chapter 1 as we applaud one another's sin. Thing just collapses. This is not a shock. It's sad, but it's not a shock. And so they're poaching each other, according to the Boy Scouts. Blame for the rampant marketplace confusion lies at everyone's feet but its own, the Girl Scouts said. The Boy Scouts responded to their latest filing in a statement accusing the Girl Scouts of starting a ground war. They're both bleeding out. Scouts reporting 2.2 million members, a third as many as its record membership in 72. The Girl Scouts have just 1.7 million members, down from its highest membership in 2003. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you. By the way, if you want to hear past shows, you can grab them wherever you would find your podcasts. Apple, Google, Spotify, whatever. It's all over the place. So just look up the Steve Noble Show there. You can go to the website, thestevenobleshow.com. You will see something at the top of the web page. Through the end of this week, as we're doing some year-end fundraising, this is on Christian radio, which you generally have to pay for. And so we need to raise funds to help do that and keep the ministry afloat. By the way, this isn't some huge juggernaut. Thank the Lord for the 30, 31, 32 stations that we're on right now and focusing primarily on North Carolina and a little bit outside of that. But our main focus is North Carolina. And we thank the Lord for that. But we have through Facebook and through radio, God's given us, you know, a significant platform. It's not huge. It's not, you know, nationwide, big time conservative talk radio. But for a station and for a show that's dedicated to applying the truth of God's word, regardless of whether it's popular or not, and to have a live format, which is super important. You listen on the Christian radio station that you're listening to, which we praise the Lord for, every single one of them. But the vast majority of the programming on there is preaching and teaching, which is great. We need that. And then a little bit of talk radio, but not much. And certainly not a lot of live talk, Christian talk radio that gives us the ability to respond to what's going on in the news really within a few hours. And regular conservatism has that platform. Certainly the mainstream media has that platform, but conservative Christianity doesn't have a lot of live programming, which makes this platform that much more important, that we have an ability. We have a platform both on digitally, Facebook and podcast versus radio, that we can get on the air and basically talk about anything that's happened in the last 24 hours. And that's really important to be able to apply to a biblical conservative concept, construct, both theologically and culturally, to the news of the day. And so, you know, this is about, we run this whole ministry on roughly $180,000 to $220,000 a year, runs the whole thing. That gets me a decent income to support my family. I'm not whining about that. I'm thankful for that. And the radio costs and studio costs and all that kind of stuff. So it's always important at the end of the year so we can begin the new year strong. And especially as we're coming out of 2020 into 2021 with what's going on with the presidential election and the continued degradation of our culture, then we need to maintain that base. We need to maintain our platform. So that's it. So if you go to the website, thestevenobleshow.com, and you feel prayerfully convicted and you think, yeah, I want to support this. It's been a blessing to me. And, you know, I'm not here for popularity. I say things that upset people on the right. A lot of the things I say upset more easily people on the left. But I'm not concerned with stepping on toes. I'm concerned with the truth. I try to speak the truth with as much grace and love as I can muster. But I'm not trying to kowtow to one side or the other. That's for sure. I'm just trying to be faithful to the calling the Lord has placed on me and this ministry, this platform, to apply his truth, not just to politics and the news of the day, but to everything, every nook and cranny of life. So if you feel compelled and would like to help support us, we would certainly appreciate that. Just go to thestevenobleshow.com. We are a regular 501c3 ministry, so your donations are tax deductible, and you can do it right there online. Or you can mail a check. All that information is there on the homepage, thestevenobleshow.com. Okay, one last thought on the Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts in this ground war. Because they both compromise, the Boy Scouts, which used to talk about moral integrity, are now all about moral ambiguity. And when you do that, you have no base on which to stand. You're just chasing after the things of the world. And there's a way that seems right to man, right? But in the end, it leads to destruction, which is exactly what's happening to the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts. It's sad to see, for me as a former Boy Scout, and both our sons made Eagle Scout, but we were in a very Christ-centered troop. And so as the Boy Scouts was compromising and collapsing all around us, we stood our ground. But that's not the deal anymore. And so they're starving to death. They're dying off. And so they're poaching each other, trying to put up another sign, another color in the flag, another appropriation for the world to try to get the world to come. And it's not working. And that's sad, but it's also true kind of for the church. If you're not going to stand for the things of God, you should fall. Get out of the way. Quit claiming to be disciples of Jesus Christ if you're not willing to pick up your cross and follow him. I wrote a devotional on this today. If you want to get the devotional, it's just called The Daily Dose. Just text the word dose, D-O-S-E, to 66866. And today was Jesus talking in John chapter 15, because we're working our way through the Gospel of John, about the world's going to hate you. But don't worry, hated me first, Jesus said. But it's going to hate you. You stand for the things of God. You speak out for the things of God. You do your politics via the things of God. You talk about the culture via the things of God. You engage your friends or neighbors or coworkers utilizing the word of God and utilizing the truth of God, and you will get some hatred. It may not be overt, but you're going to get it. And if it might just be in their heart and in their mind, but you're going to get it. Okay? That's the deal. If you run around trying to be the nicest person on the planet, it's important. But if you're all grace and no truth, you're just a compromiser. That's all it is. Okay, we'll get to that by the end of the show. Okay, so let's talk about Donald Trump. He came out swinging on this big fat stimulus bill. That looked great. He's like, I'm not going to sign this thing. It's so much garbage in there. He was talking about it in his video the other day. $85.5 million for assistance in Cambodia, $134 million to Burma, $1.3 billion for Egypt and the Egyptian military, which, of course, they're going to buy Russian military equipment, $25 million for democracy and gender programs in Pakistan. We talked about that the other day. $505 million to Belize, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, and Panama. $40 million for the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., which isn't even open. $1 billion for the Smithsonian, an additional $154 million for the National Gallery of Art. So he's hammering away and saying, you know, the $600 per person is ridiculous. That should be $2,000 per person and $600 per kid. And you guys got so much pork in this because they combined the omnibus spending bill with the coronavirus relief bill. And it's just a big bleh. And so he stood up and hammered away. And that was great, right? I was cheering for that. You probably were too. But then just within the last 24 hours, he signs it. But then there's this little caveat, okay? He says this: I'm asking Congress to amend this bill and increase the ridiculously low $600 to $2,000 or $4,000 for a couple. I'm also asking Congress to immediately get rid of the wasteful and unnecessary items from this legislation and to send me a suitable bill, or else the next administration will have to deliver a COVID relief package. President Donald Trump announced on Sunday evening that he was signing the coronavirus stimulus package and the government spending bill, and that he will use the, something most of us have never heard of, Impoundment Control Act of 1974 in an attempt to get Congress to drop what he called wasteful spending. All right, so he's utilizing that, saying, I can come in here and basically kind of line item veto. As president, I've told Congress that I want far less wasteful spending and more money going to the American people in the form of $2,000 checks. Trump said that he would sign the bill along with making many rescissions under the Impoundment Control Act, which allows the president to impound funds when he transmits a special message in accordance with the ICA, the U.S. Government Accountability Office explains. Upon sending the message, amounts proposed for rescission, that is for permanent cancellation, may be impounded for a period of 45 days of continuous congressional session. So he's saying that, right? I'm going to sign it with a strong message that makes clear to Congress that wasteful items need to be removed. I'm signing this bill to restore unemployment benefits, stop evictions, provide rental assistance and money for PPP, return our airline workers back to work. And those were all part of the $900 billion coronavirus relief. Then you got the other thing, okay? The rest of it, the omnibus spending bill, which was just a bunch of kids in a Toys R Us, if that still existed, with their parents' credit card, okay? But that goes to Congress. And who's in charge of the House? Oh, that's right, the Democrats. And who's in charge of the Senate? Well, the Republicans, kinda, with Mitch McConnell, who in many ways is just a rhino. So I'll tell you what the lead Democrat said on the House Appropriations Committee, because it's gonna go there and die there and will accomplish absolutely nothing. That and many other things when we come back right after this. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. Why did you do that, Mr. President? You stood up so strongly against this big bloated omnibus bill that they then tied to the coronavirus relief bill, $900 billion for the coronavirus relief bill, and then about another $1.3, $1.4 trillion for the omnibus spending just nightmare, train wreck, bunch of kids with their parents' credit cards down in Disney or something, and just buy everything, fund everything, take care of all your friends, take care of all your foreign entanglements, yada, 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 throwing around money like we have it, because we don't. And then all of a sudden he comes out and he signs it, and they called the bill a disgrace, right? He hammered it, which was great. And then they're sending back a quote unquote, a redlined version of the bill to Congress, which includes an item by item breakdown and formal rescission request, insisting that any wasteful items be removed from the bill. As president, this is a quote, I've told Congress that I want far less wasteful spending and more money going to the American people. Trump said in a statement issued by White House Deputy Press Secretary Jud Deer on Sunday, much more money is coming. I'll never give up my fight for the American people. And, you know, he hammered away and that was good. And then he referenced an old end around type maneuver, the Impoundment Control Act of 1974, which is kind of calling Congress out. To me, it looks like a bit of a stretch. But it goes to the House and it goes to the Senate. It's going to the House first, right? So House Appropriations Committee Chairman Nita Lowey, Democrat in New York, said that she and her committee's Democrat majority plan to reject the president's request. Quote, President Trump has indicated that he will now send a rescissions package back to Congress that aims to reverse funding his own administration requested and undo the careful bipartisan agreement that he just signed, she said in a statement. The House Appropriations Committee has jurisdiction over rescissions, and our Democratic majority will reject any rescissions submitted by President Trump. By turning the page on this request, we will allow the Biden-Harris administration to begin to build back better. It's just such, that's their little saying, build back better. Funny. So in addition to increasing the size of the stimulus checks, Congress has promised that Section 230, a provision in the Communications Decency Act, which shields social media companies from liability related to third-party content on their platforms, will be, quote, reviewed and either be terminated or substantially reformed, quote unquote, and that the House and Senate have agreed to launch an investigation into potential voter fraud in the presidential election. Senator Mitch McConnell applauded President Trump's decision, of course. South Carolina Republican Lindsey Graham confirmed that Congress will vote on additional stimulus checks and repealing Section 230, calling the moves all wins for the American people. Of course he says that. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called Trump's decision welcome news for the 14 million Americans who just lost their lifeline of unemployment benefits on Christmas weekend and for the millions more struggling to stay afloat during the historic pandemic and economic crisis. As usual now, just a whole lot of confusion, backpedaling, maneuvering going on in Washington, D.C., which mostly takes place out of the sight of us. Newt Gingrich, why I will not give up. There's a lot of things in this article. This is kind of depressing, but sober-minded. A lot of things in here I really appreciate him writing, which is why I'm going to share a fair amount of it. So this was Newt Gingrich writing on his website, why I will not give up. He's talking about the presidential election as well as America in general. My unwillingness to relax and accept that the election was over grew out of a level of outrage and alienation unlike anything I'd experienced in more than 60 years of involvement in public affairs. The challenge is that I and other conservatives are not disagreeing with the left within a commonly understood world. We live in alternative worlds. We look at everything from completely different perspectives. I've talked about this recently here on the show in terms of, like, I use the Tower of Babel kind of in a strange reversal kind of way. We don't have a common language in America anymore. We don't have a common Judeo-Christian basis, so that language is gone. And we have no common civic language anymore because people don't understand civics. And so then you have the right and the left, conservative, liberal, and they don't have a common language. So they see eye to eye on very little. Okay, the left's world is mostly, Newt Gingrich writes, the established world of the forces who have been dominant for most of my life. My world is the populist rebellion, which believes we are being destroyed, our liberties are being canceled, and our religions are under assault. We also believe other Democrat-led COVID-19 policies have enriched the wealthy while crushing middle-class small business owners. Some 160,000 restaurants may close as a result of COVID. A million small businesses nationwide, and counting, by the way, have gone down because of COVID. Now, people in my world are told it's time to stop resisting and cooperate with the new president. But we remember that the Democrats wanted to cooperate with Trump so much that they began talking about his impeachment before he even took office. The Washington Post ran a story on Democrat impeachment plots the day of the inauguration. In fact, nearly 70 Democratic lawmakers boycotted his inauguration. A massive left-wing demonstration was staged in Washington the day after, where Madonna announced she dreamed of blowing up the White House to widespread applause. These same forces want me to cooperate with their new president. I find myself adopting the Nancy Pelosi model of constant resistance. Nothing I've seen from Biden since the election offers me any hope that he will reach out to the more than 74 million Americans who voted for President Trump. So I'm not reacting to the vote so much as to the whole election environment. This is Newt Gingrich writing this. When Twitter and Facebook censored the oldest and fourth largest newspaper because it accurately reported news that could hurt Biden's chances, where were the New York Times and Washington Post? That's a great question. The truth of the Hunter Biden story is now becoming impossible to avoid or conceal. The family of the Democrat nominee for president received at least $5 million from an entity controlled by our greatest adversary. All that kind of stuff. Listen to this. Most Americans who voted for Biden never heard any of this stuff or were told before the election it was Russian disinformation. Once they did hear of it, 17% said they would have switched their vote, according to the poll by the Media Research Center. That would have affected the entire election. The censorship worked exactly as intended, Newt Gingrich writes. But this is just a start. When Twitter censors 4 of 5 Rush Limbaugh tweets in one day, I fear for the country. When these monolithic internet giants censor the president of the United States, I fear for the country. When I see elite billionaires like Mark Zuckerberg are able to spend $400 million to hire city governments, essentially to maximize turnout in specifically Democratic districts, without any regard to election spending laws or good governance standings, I fear for the country. When I read that Apple has a firm rule of never irritating China, and I watch the NBA kowtow to Beijing, I fear for our country. When I watch story after story about election fraud being spiked, without even the appearance of journalistic due diligence or curiosity, I know something is sick. The election process itself was the final straw in creating the crisis of confidence, which is accelerating and deepening for many millions of Americans. Aside from a constant stream of allegations of outright fraud, there are some specific outrages, any of which was likely enough to swing the entire election. And they list out a bunch of these. I'll share this article on the Facebook live feed. The entire elite liberal media lied about the timeline of the COVID-19 vaccine. They blamed President Trump for the global pandemic, even as he did literally everything top scientists instructed him to do. For more than 4 years, the entire establishment mobilized against the elected president of the United States as though they were an immune system trying to kill a virus. Now they are telling us we are undermining democracy. You have more than 74 million voters, this is Newt Gingrich writing, who supported President Trump despite everything. And given the election mess, the number could easily be significantly higher. The truth is, tens of millions of Americans are deeply alienated and angry. If Biden governs from the left, and he will almost certainly be forced to, that number will grow rapidly and we will win a massive election in 2022. That's an off-year election. That would be like taking over control of the House and maybe even the Senate, deepening the strength in the Senate or taking it back, depending on what happens with the election next week. Given this environment, I have no interest in legitimizing the father of a son who Chinese Communist Party members boast about buying. Nor do I have any interest in pretending that the current result is legitimate or honorable. It is simply the final stroke of a four-year establishment media power grab. It has been perpetrated by people who have broken the law, cheated the country of information, and smeared those of us who believe in America over China, history over revisionism, and the liberal ideal of free expression over cancel culture. I write this in genuine sorrow because I think we are headed toward a serious, bitter struggle in America. This extraordinary coordinated four-year power grab threatens the fabric of our country and the freedom of every American. That's Newt Gingrich, the title of the article, Why I Will Not Give Up. And that's, it's not easy to read, but I agree with most of the things he's saying. And I'll link to the article in the Facebook live feed today. Very, very serious what's going on here. And it's been going on for a while. This is not new. Okay? But Trump was, Trump's presidency, the Trump style, everything about him has just been the perfect accelerant for things that are already there. The desire to completely reshape America was already there. The desire to completely cut the regular American people, especially conservatives, out of the process was already there. It's just Trump, by the fact that he was against the swamp and against the regular machine and didn't play by their rules, just exacerbated all of that for them. And everybody was a Trump voter in this election. Everybody. Either voting against him vehemently or for him, mostly vehemently. It's just been amazing. And I appreciate Newt Gingrich just being honest here. And he fears for his country. And so do I. I fear for the nation. I'm not completely in the tank thinking that America's got no hope whatsoever. That light is fading a bit. I mean, not a bit, significantly. But when I come back, here's another article. This is Tony Perkins in the FRC. Christian conservatives shatter turnout records for Trump. We still have a significant amount of influence. The question is, even if you get out to vote, if it's as broken as it appears to be, if it's as given over as it appears to be, does that even matter? We better be people of prayer now more than ever. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Good to be with you back from Christmas, a little bit of a Christmas break. That was nice, wasn't it? So this week we'll be live today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. We'll be off on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, then back live in the studio next Monday. But this Wednesday, I always like to do some type of a wrap-up show of the year. So on this Wednesday, we're going to do just callers. For the whole entire show, and with one question, I just want to ask you one question, is what have you learned going through 2020? What's changed for you? What have you learned about yourself? How has God worked on you in 2020? What have you learned? What did he change? What did he boil off? What kind of, as the heat gets turned up and he's purifying the precious metal, right? The dross floats to the top. Well, maybe what was that for you? What did you learn? How did 2020 change you? So we'll talk about that this Wednesday. And then be back next week. Maybe we'll do kind of the biggest stories of the year as we move into 2021. We'll see. But this is the craziness that we're in is, I guess, from a radio perspective, the gift that keeps on giving. I'm not going to run out of content anytime soon. As our nation continues to kind of spiral down into this great chasm of division. But I mentioned this recently, and I'm going to get back to this. I'm working my way through a really fascinating report. It's about 120 pages long. I was taking some nationwide surveys and questioning and polling over the summer about what's going on in America. And you're finding some things that we actually, both sides of the aisle actually agree on, which are kind of interesting. This is us, not people in D.C., not people in the swamp. These are just regular people out there between the coasts. And and distrust of government and lack of believability that the government's actually going to solve anything, that's a pretty common denominator for a lot of us. So what do you do with that as we march into the future? And as 2021 comes flying at us next week, and if Trump doesn't get another term, and we just be a person of prayer, okay, being praying specifically for those that are involved in trying to unmask fraud and illegality. We cannot exist as a nation if we don't have an election system that we can trust. That's the biggest issue. Pray for the stability of the U.S. Constitution. That's at play here. And for the divide, pray for Donald Trump. Pray for everybody involved in the process that the forces of darkness would be defeated and that truth would have its day and that things would be uncovered that need to be uncovered and that truth would prevail. But don't give up. That's why I read you that kind of depressing in many ways Newt Gingrich article, Why I Will Not Give Up. And he's not giving up, and I'm not giving up, and you shouldn't give up, whether it's the Trump presidency or anything else. Now we get to the other side of January 20th, and what happens that day, what happens next week with the Senate, the two runoff elections in Georgia, that's a huge deal. If Joe Biden assumes the presidency on January 20th and the Democrats take the Senate, friend, you will not recognize this country in a matter of weeks. You just won't. They'll have an absolute... they'll control the whole process, the presidency, the executive branch, and the entire legislative branch, controlled by the radical left, which is completely out of the closet, has no shame. And there are no restraints there. If they take the Senate, if they get it 50-50, they win those two seats, it's 50-50, and the tie vote is Kamala Harris, assuming Joe Biden assumes office. I'm telling you, you won't recognize this country, and it won't take very long. And that could be coming at us. We need to be praying about that. And ultimately, what is our, how now shall we live? That's the big question. I brought that up before Christmas. How do we live? How do we operate effectively as Christians in this environment? As our government slips away, as the very nation that we live in and love, most of us, slips away. How do you live in that? How do you thrive in that? Not just survive, but thrive. How do you live effectively in that dual citizenship as an American, but primarily as a follower of Jesus Christ? That's not an easy answer to come up with. There's a lot of biblical grounds there. There's a lot of things that the scripture tells us to do. But sometimes that's easier said than done when you're in the middle of it. I don't think any of us expected to see the nation in the state that it's in right now, even going back to the beginning of the year. In January, it's 2020, the year of vision, blah, 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 blah. And then starts blowing up. But this was encouraging to me. Tony Perkins put this out from the Family Research Council. Christian conservatives shatter turnout records for Trump. Of course, the downside of that is if it's so broken, why does it matter? But don't give up, okay? Hold on. 4 years ago, researcher George Barna would be the first to tell you that he never thought he'd see a stronger statistic. Sage cons, they're called. Those Americans he carefully segments out as spiritually active, governance engaged, thus sage, right? S-A-G-E. And conservatives nearly maxed out their turnouts at the polls. 91% of them, driven by their dislike of Hillary Clinton, showed up to vote, shattering every record ever set. We thought, well, we're never going to see that again in our lifetimes, George Barna says. You can't really get much higher than that. He was wrong and couldn't be happier about it. This election, these voters showed up in staggering, mind-blowing, quote-unquote, numbers. A whopping 99% of Sage cons turned out to vote. No one else, George explains, even came close. We cast 23 million votes. That's a third of the president's total. And what makes that so impressive, Barna explained on Washington Watch, is that they only make up 9% of the population. And yet this 9% of motivated Christians accounted for 14% of the vote. Talk about impact. Now, let me throw this in there. This isn't in the article. What if we were actually calling legislators, especially in hot button states? What if we were calling our own legislators? What if we were, I don't know, praying regularly for those in authority over us, praying regularly, pleading with the Lord for truth and justice to prevail in this election? What if we were doing that? Your responsibility just doesn't end on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November every 2 years. No, it's every day. It's 24/7 as a Christian, okay? Of course, none of this, back to the article, has made its way into the media's analysis, in part, I'm sure, because they don't want to admit how much political influence Christian conservatives have. It conflicts with their 40-year narrative that the religious right is a dying breed, and it also goes against their phony storyline that evangelicals turned against Trump in 2020, an absurd myth that Barna research thoroughly debunks. Part of the problem, Barna explains, is how the media defines evangelical. They don't understand religion or care about religion. He said they just ask people, hey, do you consider yourself to be an evangelical or born-again Christian? And they lump those two groups together. Almost 90% of the U.S. House call themselves Christian. But how many of their ideologies actually line up with what the Bible teaches? Oh, therein lies the trick, right? You can call yourself a Christian, but does that mean you are? If you're standing in a garage, does that mean you're a car? If you go to church, does that mean you're a Christian? No. Like Jesus told Nicodemus, you must be born again. And if you're like, hey, Steve, you say that born again thing a lot. I don't really know what that means. Okay, if you don't know what it means to be born again, and this is going to be easy for you to hear. You may not be a Christian. If you don't understand what it means to be born again, you may be relying on your own quote-unquote good works, being a decent person, thinking you have more good to offer than bad. If that's you, and you don't really understand what it means to be born again, do yourself a favor, okay? Go to my website, not to donate, nothing. I just want you to go to the website, The Steve Noble Show, and at the top, and even at the bottom of the homepage, you're going to see it one button, one navigation option that says heaven. Just click on that. It's going to walk you through what the Bible says about who is a Christian and who is not, and what it means to be born again. If that sounds like a kind of a foreign, weird concept to you, my concern is that you're actually not a Christian. According to God's word, you must be born again. Jesus said it himself in John chapter 3 to Nicodemus, a big time religious authority of his day. You must be born again. Make sure you get that right. Barna doesn't do that, or the regular polling people don't do that. Media doesn't do that. They just say, hey, are you a Christian? Yeah, sure. No. So that's really a compelling story that we showed up. We were 23% of Trump's vote, and we're only 9% of the country. Conservative, evangelical, born-again Christians. So that's good. You still have a lot of power, for lack of a better word. But you have to exercise that. It's like a car with a great engine. If you never press the gas pedal, it's not going anywhere. We actually do, in the natural, have all kinds of power when we get out and we vote and we engage. But even more so if we hit our knees and we pray. Let's finish with this. This is convicting. This is from a former atheist in Britain named Rob Slane. This showed up on ZeroHedge.com just a couple days ago on the 23rd. The year 2020, the year the church was as sharp as a two-edged marshmallow. It's a curious fact that the Bible contains the phrase fear not many times, whereas the word nice is never used. Yet you'd hardly know it to look at the state of many churches at the moment. There seems to be an overwhelming emphasis on being nice, which generally means never saying anything provocative or dangerous or which could be seen as being judgmental. Go read John chapter 15, okay? I must admit to being more than a little stunned by the reaction of many churches this year. Whatever calamities befall us in life, Christians are exhorted to overcome by seeing them as a light momentary affliction, which is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. That's 2 Corinthians 4. This does not mean never fearing. Rather, it means that we are to overcome that fear through faith. So in Psalm 91, the psalmist can say, you will not fear the terror of the night, nor the arrow that flies by day, nor the pestilence that stalks in darkness, nor the destruction that wastes at noonday. And he says this not because he's stoic, but because he just said this. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. True belief in the death, resurrection, and ascension of Jesus Christ is supposed to equip the Christian to overcome fear. Yet it seemed to me that the reaction of much of the church to a coronavirus with an infection fatality rate of around 0.2 to 0.26% has really been no different than that of the non-Christian. But this is not the half of it. Fear of the virus has shaped the way many have responded to the most astonishing powers over church for 8 centuries. He's talking about governmental interaction. I understand there may have been nervousness back in March when some feared that we were about to see a sort of plague coming our way. However, at the very least, the churches could have said to the government, okay, we're with you for a few weeks, but after that, you can't stop us. Defiance? Hardly. Not only do the majority of churches in the country seem to think the state has absolute jurisdiction over the church, it doesn't, but they have allowed it to reshape the way they worship. Okay, if you're looking for popularity, if you're looking for softness, if you think the best way to represent the Lord is just to be super nice and not make anybody uncomfortable, you're not doing it right. Jesus said they'll hate us, but they hated him first. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.